This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. My co-host, Meghna Chakrabarty, is out on assignment today. Our next segment deals with a difficult subject, and parts of this discussion might not be suitable for some of our younger listeners. So with that disclaimer, let's proceed. Asia Graves is a 24-year-old woman who has been to hell and back. At the age of 16, a Boston pimp recruited her and forced her into commercial sex. She spent the next 2.5 years in the life, a victim of the brutal world of sex trafficking. She says her pimps coerced her to have sex with strangers, kicked her in the face, and slashed her cheek to mark her as their property. Because this kind of crime lives in the dark shadows of our society, hard numbers are hard to come by. But experts who track it say some 27 million people, like Asia Graves, have been pulled into sex trafficking around the world. Here in the Boston area, advocates say about 500 minors, mostly girls like Asia, are either victims of commercial sexual exploitation or at risk of becoming so. After the drug trade, sex trafficking is the second fastest growing black market. So it's a big problem, with lots of very young lives at risk. The big challenge here for law enforcement is that victims are often afraid to speak out against their pimps, which brings us back to Asia Graves. She did speak out, and her testimony back in 2009 led to the conviction and sentencing of 6 men, including her 2 pimps, in one of the largest child sexual exploitation cases in Massachusetts. Today, Asia Graves continues to speak out, and at some risk to her own safety. And she joins us now from Washington, D.C., where she works for Fair Girls, an organization fighting sexual exploitation. And Asia Graves, welcome to Radio Boston. Thank you very much for coming in today. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you fell into this life at the age of 16. Can you tell us how that happened?
Well, I didn't come from the best of home life. My home life was sort of unstable. I went between my mom's house, my dad's house, and an aunt who raised me as well. And when you have a mother that's addicted to crack cocaine, it's kind of hard to have a stable life, as well as I didn't have a positive support system around me. Mm. So therefore, it made me a lot more vulnerable than a girl who had a supportive family.
Yeah. And so how did you come in contact with these men who eventually brought you into this life?
Well, my dad and me, I was living with him at the time being before I got into it. And he asked me to pay $900 a month in rent, which is kind of unimaginable for a 16-year-old to be able to afford. Mm. So since I couldn't afford to pay even the money he asked me to pay, a group of girls who were a little bit older than me invited me to come and stay with them for a few weeks. While I moved in with them, I didn't know what they were doing for work. They said that they just had rich boyfriends. Later, I found out they were actually pimps.
I see.
Their boyfriends were pimps.
I see.
And they took me to a restaurant downtown Boston. And when I got to the restaurant, they said they were going to the bathroom. They paid the bill, and they left me at the restaurant. I went outside and was told by the girls when I called them, well, you need to make money so you can get home. Walk downtown Boston. This is what you do. And I was scared, afraid, in a very small outfit, and I didn't know what to do. A guy approached me and told me that I was very beautiful and that I didn't deserve to be out on the streets and I deserved to be in a home with him. He took me home with him, and when I got home with him, just giving him $40 basically made me become his property. Because in the lifestyle, if you give a pimp any money at all, you become their property.
But how did that?
That was his.
How did that happen? I mean, when you say you gave him $40, did he ask you for money for the ride home, or how did that transaction begin? I guess.
Well, he said we were going to a hotel. We got to the hotel, and when I was younger, I was a victim of sexual abuse. Mm. So therefore, I had already known it was okay for men to touch me to get what they wanted out of it. So when I got to the hotel with him, we had sexual intercourse, which I just thought was normal. After that, he asked me for money towards the hotel because he said it was very expensive. He was a little bit short on cash. Could he borrow $40 from me? Hmm. So I said, no problem, and I gave him the money.
So he becomes your pimp. Now, I mean, I have to assume that at a certain point when someone like you was in the situation that you were in, there's a certain... allure is probably the wrong word, but a man like this can offer you something that you're looking for, right?
It wasn't that he could offer me something I could look for. he was offering me at least a roof over my head.
Sure.
That was the only good part about it.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a supportive family, so therefore he was my family. A trafficker becomes everything that a girl may need in their lifestyle at the mm-hmm. time being. They're going to fulfill any need that's not met.
Yeah.
So I don't really call it a lure. I call it more of just providing the basic necessities that a parent or guardian should provide for a child.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's what I was going after, and I think you're right, the allure is not the right word. So when you were in the life, give us a sense of how your typical day went.
Well, a typical day for me would start off with going to sleep, because I would work all night until about 8 or 9 in the morning. So I would get up about 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, make sure I went to the hair salon or the nail salon to make sure that I was groomed properly, have dinner. Then by about 8:30 or 9 o'clock, go downtown Boston to, like, Erie Street in Cortez, which is, like, right over in downtown Boston. Stay out there till about 6 or 7 or 8 in the morning. Go back to the hotel, maybe eat a little small breakfast, give him everything that I made, sleep for 2 hours or 3 hours, wake up, have to do calls on for that we got offline at the hotel, then sleep for 2 to 3 more hours and go back to work. Probably sleep about 4 hours in between.
Now, Asia, in your case, and in the case of many people who ended up in this situation, the pimps that were running you, claiming to take care of you, they became abusive. What did they do to you?
Well, a trafficker is known to have to do whatever it takes to keep a woman in line. And for me, I chose not to listen at certain times. So therefore, I was beaten brutally. I was sexually assaulted and left for dead, as well as I was pregnant at one point when I decided to leave the lifestyle. They sent girls to beat me really badly and forced me to miscarry.
Mm. Why were you trapped? I mean, I just want you to be as explicit as possible about this. Why couldn't you just walk away from this life once it became so clear that you were being treated so brutally?
I just had a quick question for you. You ask me that question, but would you ever ask a woman who's a victim of domestic violence, why didn't she leave? I don't think that's a question that you would ask a woman that's a victim of domestic violence. When a girl is involved in this lifestyle, they become victims of Stockholm syndrome. They actually start to love their trafficker. Mm. If they're with their trafficker for a long period of time, they're going to want to stay because they feel that no one would understand them. And when you feel that no one understands you, and when you wake up in the morning and you go outside, you go to work, and you're leaving about 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning, and people are staring at you, you don't feel like you fit in with these people anymore. So that the only people that actually love and care about you are people who are involved in that lifestyle, such as your trafficker, as well as people who are involved in the lifestyle, like other girls and the Johns.
Now, you did end up speaking out. As we mentioned, you testified in a federal case here in Boston back in 2009. What convinced you to speak out, to free yourself from that life and to speak out? Because it took a lot of courage. You had to, and it took a lot of risk, too.
If I didn't speak to police or law enforcement, I would end up dead. And I knew that it was the lesser of two evils. Either A, these guys can stay out in the street and hurt me as well as recruit other young ladies into that lifestyle, or B, I could testify against them where they'd be put behind bars. Yes, my safety would be compromised for a long period of time, but it's better than worrying about someone coming and shooting my house or beating me or going after other girls or women when I could actually just be a woman and stand up or what's right.
Mm. Now, I've read as well, and understandably, it's still maybe not completely straightforward for you. It's still dangerous for you to be speaking out like this. You live in Washington, D.C. now, but I've read statements from folks who say you're still taking a big risk. I mean, even coming on the air and talking on a program like this. Do you think that's true? And if so, why is it important for you to do this?
It's important for me to do this because if I don't speak out, victims who are still in that lifestyle would never know that there is someone that's been where they've been at who's turned their life around. After I did the Boston Globe piece, a father of a young girl who was involved in the lifestyle that worked for one of the same traffickers that I worked for reached out to me and said, "Can you help my daughter?" When I did my USA Today piece, there were girls who called our office and spoke to my executive director and said, I'm not ready to leave, but I'll talk about Backpage and stand with you guys and fight Backpage. Mm-hmm. When Nicholas Kristof interviewed me, girls came forward and spoke to us. I've even had people who are in that lifestyle still say, I'm not ready to leave, but you stood up for all of us.
Well, Asia Graves, stand by. I want to introduce another voice into this conversation. Lisa Goldblatt Grace is co-founder and director of My Life Choice. It's a program out of the Boston-based Justice Resource Institute. It works with and supports adolescent girls most vulnerable to sex exploitation. And Lisa, thanks so much for coming in today. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for covering this issue. And Asia, it's so nice to hear you.
Nice to hear you too, Lisa.
So, Lisa, we've just heard a very moving, compelling, disturbing story from Asia Graves. Give us put her story in perspective. How many people are out there that are facing the kind of risk that she faced?
I wish I could give you some hard and fast numbers. We don't have them yet. What I can tell you is that Asia's story is unfortunately very typical. Mm. The most frequent age of entry into the commercial sex industry here in the Boston area is the same as it is nationally, which is 12 to 15 years old. Mm. It's middle school age. Pimps systematically, mindfully target girls of that age, and they're particularly looking for girls who are vulnerable the way Asia so articulately described her own vulnerability, but they're looking for girls who lack a safety net and will look for girls for whom they can provide, kind of fill those gaps and exploit those vulnerabilities. And the degradation and the violence that follows is that Asia described is unfortunately very, very typical.
You know, one of the things that came out of Asia's story, I mean, the sense I get is that for every one of her who has the courage or the ability or the wherewithal to speak out and free themselves from this life, there must be many who cannot.
Absolutely. What I will tell you is at My Life, My Choice, we're a survivor-led program. And so all of our direct service staff are strong, resilient, powerful women like Asia who are now in a position to be able to serve girls and young women and support them in their journey. And so while, yes, there are many who don't have an opportunity to speak out, I'm privileged to know incredible, resilient, powerful survivors like Asia who are leading this movement and should be the loudest voice in the movement.
Listeners, if you have a question about the story of Asia Graves or about sex trafficking in Massachusetts or nationally, if you want to join this conversation, you can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Lisa, I want to come back to you. In 2011, the state passed its first human trafficking bill, which went into effect in February. From my understanding, this law seeks to fund programs to combat human trafficking. I'm wondering, is this law enough? What else needs to happen to help people out there who were in the situation that Asia described?
The law was a really important step forward. We were the 48th state in the nation to enact human trafficking legislation. So we were later to get it done, but what was enacted was a really important law. It both increased penalties for traffickers and for purchasers, customers, Johns, who are equally at fault. And it also provided safe harbor provisions, which allow judges to presume that a child that comes before them in a court of law related to charges associated with prostitution, that child's a sexually exploited minor that deserves support and services and not jail time. I will say what it did not do is fund anything. There was no appropriation connected to the bill, but it was an incredibly important step here in the Commonwealth to say that no longer will the Commonwealth kind of co-sign this and allow this to happen, but instead will put in place the kind of infrastructure necessary to move us forward.
And Asia Graves, let me ask you, in the work that you're doing as a case manager at Fair Girls in Washington, D.C., who are you seeing down there? Who are you helping? What's the profile of the person that you're helping?
The average girl that I work with, I work with girls from the ages of 11 to 21. We also have a girl who's 10 years old we're currently working with. But on average, I'm seeing a lot more girls who are probably in the 8th grade, 9th grade, or at maybe 16 attending a high school in a lower income community in D.C., as well as a lot of these girls, when they meet their traffickers, they believe their traffickers are their boyfriends. We teach a program called Tell Your Friends in our D.C. public schools, which myself and my counterpart Priya teaches. In that program, we go into D.C. public high schools and reach over 1,000 high school students per year. And we go over a curriculum based on preventing sexual exploitation, as well as we have programs in the detention centers, as well as community centers that we work with teens and youth all over D.C. to let them know what happens in trafficking and how to prevent it from happening. And if they are victims, we work with girls. Since I've gotten to Fair Girls, Fair Girls' caseload has tripled 3 times as much. And President Clinton spoke out at the Global Initiative on trafficking and has been in contact with my organization as well as other organizations in the area to help.
We're talking to Asia Graves. She was a victim of sexual exploitation and trafficking. She's now a case manager at Fair Girls based in Washington, D.C. Also with us is Lisa Goldblatt Grace, co-founder and director of the My Life, My Choice program here in Boston. Let's take a couple of calls because we've got some interesting questions out there from listeners. Anne is calling from West Roxbury. Hi, Anne. You're on the air.
Hi there. I am currently a guardian ad litem for a girl who is missing in Massachusetts.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And my question is, how much, and she's probably gang-related, so I'm just wondering how much of this is about gangs.
Okay, Anne, let me put that question first to Asia, and then I'll let Lisa answer that as well.
When I was in that lifestyle, it really wasn't much related to gangs. Gangs are involved to a certain extent, but from what I know from being my own personal experience of growing up in Boston, living in Dorchester and West Roxbury, gangs really didn't play that much of a part. They're more focused on the drug side of it as well as providing the traffickers with the drugs needed to keep the girl in chains emotionally and mentally.
Lisa?
What we've seen in the last, I would say, 4 years, so we've been at this work for a decade, and what's happened in the last kind of 5 years, really, in Massachusetts, as well as we hear from service providers around the country, has been, so different, Asia, than your experience, there's been this kind of uptick in gangs, realizing that in addition to making money through selling drugs or guns, that they can make a considerable profit through selling girls. The quote is that you can only sell a drug once, but a girl is a renewable resource. So we do find a significant number of our girls who are getting pulled in and getting recruited in, getting brought into the commercial sex industry by members of gangs. So for the caller, for Anne, I hope that you're able to reach out to law enforcement that can help you in getting out of BOLO or be on the lookout report for this young woman. And please seek our support to serve her.
And we have links on our website, radioboston.org, to your organization, Lisa. I want to try to get at least one more call in. Our time is winding down here, but Candace is calling from Newton. Hi, Candace, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm calling because I have a family member that is involved in this and has been for pretty close to a decade. There are young children involved as well, and we have done, as a family, everything we possibly can. And I was wondering if there was any advice that you had or that you could guide me, because it's very dangerous, not just for the children, but also for my family member.
Candace, I appreciate the call. I'm going to give Asia a chance at this. Asia, our time's winding down, but please offer Candace any advice you can.
I would say that if you're around her, the best thing to do is not try to force her to get out, because everyone leaves when they're ready. You can always give her the human trafficking hotline number, which is run by Polaris. They're available 24 hours a day, and any services that she does need, they are available to her. No matter where she's at in the country, Polaris can find resources. As well as, if it's possible, please try to take the children away from that situation, because, as you said, it's not safe, and things could happen to those children.
And Lisa, advice for Candace.
I guess, it, just in addition to what Asia said, just to know that recovery is possible, to have hope that women are resilient and with your support, hopefully she can get there. But we'd like to be a resource to you, so please contact us offline.
Candace, thanks so much for that call. Lisa, let me sort of by way of a final question, there's a fundamental lesson here that sort of needs to be restated again and again, and that is this obviously is not a victimless crime.
Thank you.
But we have, this society has somehow allowed this to happen, right?
We have. We've co-signed this. There is no way that this would be happening in the kind of numbers that it's happening with and the way it's pervasive in our communities if we haven't co-signed it. And we need to, each, every one of us, each listener listening to this, make decision to say that no longer, this is not going to happen to our kids, and to make sure that we're talking to our girls about this, we're talking to our boys about this, we're raising a generation that doesn't believe it's okay to buy and sell people. We already figured that out in this country. No more.
Lisa Goldblatt Grace, she's co-founder and director of the My Life, My Choice, a program out of the Boston-based Justice Resource Institute. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And Asia Graves, case manager at Fair Girls in Washington, D.C. She's originally from Boston. Asia Graves, thank you for coming in. Thank you for your courage. Thank you for telling us your story. We're very grateful, and good luck to you.
You too.
And that's our program today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. Meghna Chakrabarty will be back on Monday. Join us again. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again. Have a great weekend. Join us on Monday for more Radio Boston.